Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, I'm Alan Cumming, and welcome to My Shelves. My shelves are sort of a museum of my life. I like to keep things from my travels that are, to me anyway, the very essence of the experiences I've had. Sort of portals, if you will, to a specific time and place. And the inspiration for stories and memories and musings. Here is an oil painting done by my friend Tonka, who happens to be a chimp and who I'm trying to desperately get out of a horrible situation he's in Missouri and get him to safety and let him roam free again. Here is one of my favourite cushions. I love a cushion. And here's a cushion with my friend Esther the Wonder Pig's face on it. If you don't know who Esther the Wonder Pig is, please find out immediately. And today I'm talking to Cynthia Rowley.
What if that line, I boinked Martha Stewart, gets taken out of context?
Welcome, bienvenue, welcome. Cynthia Rowley was born in a suburb of Chicago, but is now a New Yorker through and through. She's a fashion designer with stores all over the world. Her work is so fun and colourful. I just love looking at and wearing her clothes. But she doesn't just do clothes. She does handbags, cosmetics, fragrance, wetsuits, home furnishings, you name it. She's done it. She's also the author of several books and is just an absolute darling of a person. She's one of my best friends. Her second daughter is my goddaughter, and Cynthia very kindly had that child on my 40th birthday, so I always know how old my goddaughter is. That's the kind of friend she is. I have lots and lots of Cynthia Rowley things on my shelves and my walls. The first thing we're going to talk about as when we chat is actually hilarious because she has little recollection of it, even though it was a seminal moment for me. The first thing I've got from Alan Cumming's shelves is a Polaroid with five chimps on it. And what I love about this is that the last time we had this conversation, we talked about this, our stories about this were like hugely divergent and different.
So, and of course, I can't remember anything that we talked about. Yeah.
These chimps were the chimps I was in a film with. And when I was with Saffron, she said to me, we're in LA. She goes, I want to go to this store on Melrose. It's called this designer called Cynthia Rowley. I said, all right, this is like 1996. And so we go to this thing and there was these little sun hats, little flowery sun hats and that were for kids that you had in your store. And I was looking at them and I said to the girl, I said, I actually might buy some of these because I'm doing this film with these chimps and it'd be a nice goodbye gift for the chimps. And she was like, oh, and blah, blah. And then she said to me, look, you know, we will give you these hats at a discount if you send us a picture of the chimps wearing them. And I was like, sure, I'll do that. So I go back, I give the hats to the chimps at the end of the film.
That's
so thirsty. Yeah. And then I go, then I'd come back to the store and I say, here you are. And there's a Polaroid. I give her the Polaroid because it was those days of the chimps. And she put it on the wall. And then in the store in LA. And then, you know, a while goes by where I'm 2 years later, I'm in New York. I'm doing cabaret and I'm modeling. I'm doing a modeling for Tommy Hilfiger, believe it or not. And I did this fashion show and I did a shoot, a campaign thing. And the person who was interviewing me for this, there was a thing where they interviewed you and then like kind of above your head on when you walked down the runway, it said what your dreams were. And so there was a sort of an interview person to talk to you about this. And so the guy who was interviewing me was a friend of yours. And whilst we were chatting, he and I, you called up and said hello.
Oh, you know who it is? Was it David Coleman?
Yes, it was. David Coleman. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Now I remember. It's all so coming then, back to me now.
So then you and I started chatting on the phone because I went, oh, gosh, I want to thank her for, she doesn't know it, but she gave me these chimps, this present of these hats. And and then, so we got on the phone and started chatting, got on like a house on fire. I remember Dave was a bit pissed off that in the middle of his interview with me, you were... Why he answered the phone, I don't know, but then,
so I can talk to anyone forever. Yes, anyway. Yeah.
The gift of the gab.
Cab drivers, whatever.
So that was how later on you said you didn't remember seeing the Polaroid of the chimps with your hats on.
I don't think I still haven't seen it, I don't think.
I thought you told me you had, and that maybe I just told you the story and you just thought it was funny.
I think I imagined it, and I definitely remember the hats. Because weren't they patchwork, like little cute? I think I took all the fabrics, my leftover fabrics, and cut them into squares, sewed them all together, and made those cute hats.
Yeah, little bucket hats. That's right. Yeah.
And it was so cute. That was how we met. And I remember all of that. And I remember the phone call. And then...
Then I came to your fashion show.
You were in my show. I came
to a fashion show. Yes. It was so exciting because that was the next time after that we met on the telephone, and then I think you invited me to your fashion show. So it would be September, I guess, a fashion week of 98. I remember it was because I've been going to some fashion shows because I was a model then, and and I remember that it was like, it was in such an unusual place. It was the top of a skyscraper somewhere. It was on the roof of a skyscraper and you had all deck chairs. And so the runway was kind of wound round all these people in deck chairs. And I remember like the gift you got to take home was a sort of a stripy towel of yours.
Yep.
And I remember I took Saffron, my ex's little brother, Santi. He was in town and he was like about 12 or something at the time, and I took him as my date to this fashion show, and he thought it was amazing. And it was so exciting because it was like on the top of a big tall building. Where was that?
I can't remember exactly where it was, but I do remember the whole scene, the rooftop, and also because like with my shows, if there isn't a 50-50 chance that it's going to be an epic amazing show or at the end of my career and a complete disaster, then I might as well not even do it. So like all those things, like what if it rained? What if who knows? There were a million things that could have gone wrong. And actually, I do remember it was a men's show when we used to do those men's shows. Male models, as you know from being one, can kind of get a little crazy.
Pissy.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
The opposite. Like, really, just they don't care. They're all, most male models are like, oh, I was on a construction site. Someone walked by and said, wow, you should be a model. You know, nobody ever wants to say like they wanted to be a model. And so they went on casting. It's always I was forced into it. Anyway, the guy that opened the show was this real, I loved him, like a real prankster.
And I think I know the one. I think he was sort of
Claude,
blondie.
I think.
Was it sort of blondie, brownie hair?
Yeah.
And obviously
really
gorgeous.
Really cute. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And so
quite a muscly one. Quite a muscly one of the, not so much a skinny one. He had guns.
Yeah, yeah. So first he shows up day of the show. He had already had his fitting and everything. He shows up day of the show on crutches. And I'm like, what?
What's happened?
He's like, it'll be okay if I just walk. And he was the opener, you know. He's like, if I just walk with these, I was like, no, what am I going to? So I'm like, you can't do it. We can't do it. You know, this is crazy. Anyway, then he throws the crutches away and takes off this fake brace that he had on his leg. And it was all just a joke.
He was playing on me. And he did that on the runway too.
And then on the runway, he comes out in this like it was a really fun colored suit. And he has a giant flower pinned on the lapel. And I'm like, oh, I don't see it until he's already out there, you know. And then I'm like, what is he doing? And it's one of those squirting flowers. And he was walking on the runway, squirting everyone in the front row, like throughout the whole show. It was crazy. It was funny.
Those crazy male models.
I know.
Where do you think you get your, why do you think you are so colorful and fun, and why you've kind of always had that sort of, you've stood out from the pack in terms of your aesthetic, and what is that about?
Oh, well, thanks. I would attribute it to a certain amount of optimism. Mm-hmm. Maybe to me, like, color is, I don't know. Maybe I think because I started out in art school, where like playing with color was something that, you know, you could manipulate a vision with print, like with the play of colors against each other and contrasting. I don't know. It is what it is. I don't know. It really is what it is, though. Like, remember when, like, severe gray fashion was, like,
super
trendy? I was just like, I'm just going to hide out and wait till this is over, because I can't do it. I just can't do it. It's just, it's in my head.
And what's the story as well? So you were at art school, and then you started making clothes. And what, you were sitting next to a lady on a plane, and she saw your sketches or something, and that's how you got your first sales as a designer. Is that right?
Oh, that is a way more glamorous story than the reality. Instead of a plane, it was the subway system in Chicago. Oh,
great.
And instead of sketches, it was a kind of homemade jacket that I was wearing. And it was a buyer for a store that asked me about it. And I said, oh, it's my jacket. I designed it. I'm a designer. And she gave me her card and said, be in my office with your collection on Monday. And it was like a Friday, and I didn't even know what that meant, but I sewed all weekend and brought stuff to her office. And she asked about the first item that I pulled out of the plastic suit bag that I had taken from my boyfriend's suit or something. And she was like, what's the style number on that? And I was like, oh, that's style number one. And then what's the style number on that? Style number two. And anyway, that is how I got my first order. And
what shop was it? What store?
It was called Marshall Fields. It was a department, big department store. It was kind of like what Saks would be, but in the Midwest. And so it was kind of a big deal. And I knew, had no idea what I was doing. And just sewed everything and delivered it to her office.
Like one-off pieces. One-off pieces.
She ordered 18 pieces of this one item, this one little jacket. And I sewed it all. I cut it on the floor in my apartment. I sewed it all myself. I delivered it in shopping bags to her office, and she was like, what are you doing here? And I was like, here's your stuff. Here you go. She's like, you ship to a distribution center. It goes to the, like, just clueless, just really clueless. But she took pity on me. And helped
I love
me.
That.
Yeah, and helped me.
And then you started to have your own design company after that.
I mean, I still do stuff like that. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, really, like, there's no rules, you know? It's not like, you know, I'm going to go to jail for, like, doing something stupid. But, So you just have to try, you know.
I remember being with you in I remember you literally being sewn into a dress when we went to the CFDA awards.
And I was going to say which time.
Which time? Yeah. So you lit your. It was a time that I was with you, because I've seen that like at fashion shows and things, but I've never quite seen it at going out for a night out with someone. And so they sewed you into the thing, your people from your store. And then we got in, and like a sort of a minivan came for us, like a people traveler came for us. And you were like,
well, probably so I wouldn't get wrinkled.
That's right. So it's like, so that you, and you couldn't sit down. So you had to sort of, you ask them if they could put the window on the top, the skylight thing open, so you could stand all the way to the Met. But then you realize that would like screw up all your hair, so you kind of like laid this chair backwards so that like you had to basically lie down and then be helped
that's
up,
what they
like,
do.
Propped up again. And
that's
then
what
I remember
people...
like, it's mental. And then when we got to the Met, it must have been for the Met ball actually, and when we got to the Met, there was all these lines of limos, and you were like, we can't have the people carrier arriving outside. Yeah, so we got out round the corner and walked elegantly up the steps. But it was like a wee guy
in a sprinter van or something.
Yeah, totally. Like a thing you would go on like trips to the country with when you were in the scouts, you know, and hilarious. But I just thought that was, and then I just remember thinking, what if you want to go to the loo? And you're like, I won't. Yeah. And then I'll just rip it off. I'll rip it off when I get home.
That's what we have to do for fashion. Suffer.
Always. And I remember then another time at the Met Ball, I wore an outfit of yours that caused a sensation. Do you remember the sort of Highland thing? And I had a kilt, and it was a sort of, yeah. it was one of your kilts, a little mini kilt, a little high on the knee. And there's a very dashing slash where you could see up my thigh. And yeah. I had these boots, and I had like kind of like very romantic sort of almost new romantic-y a shirt, you know, that's kind of all little ribbons hanging from it and stuff. And I had a big sort of flouncy beardy with an enormous feather, an enormous like pheasant feather that went. And I remember I kept boinking people in the eye when I turned my head because of my feather. And I remember I boinked Martha Stewart. He was at another table.
Wait, what if that line, I boinked Martha Stewart, gets taken out of context?
I'm sure that'll be the line that will start this show.
That's the full quote.
There you go. But yes, it was caused a sensation. And Martha, I remember like I boinked her and I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then later we were at the next table turn. She said, she sort of mouthed to me, I like your outfit, and I mouthed back, I like yours, and she went, come here, and so I went over and we started having a laugh and a nice chit chat. But she was a big fan.
She is really funny. She's crazy fun. I think something happened when she went to jail and she just got transformed into like a kind of rad chick. I don't know, she's way cooler than the first time, yeah. I met her, you know?
Yeah, no, it's almost like she doesn't care anymore. I mean, she doesn't, she's sort of, I think she sees that people don't care. It's almost, I mean, it's, I'm, I have a whole theory about Martha Stewart, which is that when she went to prison and everything.
I think she smokes a lot of weed. I think that's the main.
I think she must do now, yeah, with Snoop Dogg being her bestie. But she was this, you know, too perfect American goddess. And so that everybody actually really hated her. They tried to be like her. They bought all her things. They wanted to be perfect. They wanted to do that thing that they felt they had to do because it was Martha Stewart. And she sort of was the epitome of all that, you know, class and stuff. But actually, secretly, they hated her because they felt they were never, they could never, be as good as she wanted them to be. So that when she went to prison and had this big fall, everyone had this great bout of Schadenfreude. And America loves sort of a comeback story as well. So when she kind of came back and triumphed and was in this new frame of mind, I think it was partly to do with the fact that, you know, Martha realized that that was her thing. She was, had those great high standards, had all that sort of those opinions about stuff, but other people didn't necessarily, and that was fine. I just think she realized that people don't care quite as much, and I think she cared less, and it made her a very different person. That's my theory.
I love that theory.
Do you know, years ago, Honey, remember Honey, my dog? She,
of course.
I talk about her in every episode of this show. She once, because she was, you know, she was quite a media personality. She once got asked to do have her own reality show. And I was like, what? And they wanted to have like a camera on her, like a doggy cam. And then obviously they'd have a crew following me, I suppose. But they wanted, it was basically what her life is like. And actually now I think it would be quite a hilarious idea. It'd be lovely to look back on. But at the time I was like, oh my God, even my fucking dog is has to be on a reality show. It's ridiculous.
See, now that I would watch. That would be so funny. You only meet people from like the thighs down, you know, like nothing above, just barely above the kneecaps.
That'd be great. That'd be so great. That's like, I always notice that when I hide from our dogs, I always do hide and seek, and they come into the room and Grant goes, where is he? And they run around. And it's so funny. Sometimes I just stand in the corner and like put a chair in front of me and I can see them. And they never look up. It's so hilarious.
Oh,
makes
my
me feel
God.
Good about myself.
I can't wait to play hide and seek with Ziggy.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, and you get into the thing of it becomes a habit. They know that when they go into a certain room or the last walk, Grant takes them out for the last walk of the night when we're in the city, I always hide. And in our place in the city, there's loads of places to hide. But I usually do it on one floor because Jerry can't make up the stairs. But it's such fun. It's such a good game to play.
Hello and welcome to Out to Lunch with me, Jay Rayner, the podcast in which I take a particularly brilliant famous person to a top restaurant and grill them to a turn. In this latest season, you'll find me having delicious dinners with the likes of Patrick Keelty, David Hare, Nina Conti, Dame Eileen Atkins and Mary Beard, and the reliably outrageous Miriam Margolyes.
Richard E. Grant was on that.
He has an always compulsion to smell whatever's around him. Has he never come and sniffed you?
Probably wisely, no.
All that and so much more. So do join me. Out to Lunch with Jay Rayner. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Anyway, I'd like to move on to our second item now, which is, so what I've got here, I've taken it down. It's not strictly speaking on Alan Cumming's shelves. It's on Alan Cumming's wall. It's in a framed picture of a sketch of yours that is of me when I walked in your show in, I think, like 99. The one was at Grand Central Station.
Yep.
And it's got, I had a little ponytail, a little sort of, you know, like Pebble from the Flintstones, a little sort of ponytail sticking out the top of my head.
That was all your idea.
Was it?
Remember. Yeah.
Oh.
I remember.
And I've got these trousers. It says number one. And the number one, it says leather trim lace up pants. And they're these really great pants with a sort of almost a cod piece sort of vibe going on. Sexy red shirt, cigarette, and attitude. And I'm smoking a cigarette and I've got my hand on my waist and I'm looking like sort of a skinny Pebble Flintstone rock star. And then the other one is it says number two, leather trim lace up pants, singlet undershirt, sheer yet manly neck ruff. I love that touch. Black boots, cigarette and attitude. And there's a little piece of fabric with a pin, actually a real piece of fabric stuck to this drawing, and I've got it. Yeah. And I actually, you made me a rough. I don't think I ended up wearing the rough in that show. Actually, I don't think I wore either of these things in that show.
I only remember one thing that you wore.
What was that?
Didn't wear.
What?
Okay, so I remember the idea that we were... Okay, well, let's set the stage because, again, 50-50 chance, end of my career or amazing
fabulous
episode.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So let's do it in Grand Central at rush hour just because, you know, it won't be too chaotic or anything.
How did you get the permission to do that? It must have been so difficult.
I mean, that's the other thing. Like, how did I get permission for... so many things. I don't know.
Yes.
I used to send cupcakes to people with like a nice note. Oh, pretty please. So I had that idea and the runway was down the middle, like a long, long, long hall. And then the girls would walk on the runway and then the guys would cross the runway, like briskly walking, like with briefcases and stuff, like that they were running for a train, but they were actually the models. And
I
don't remember anything about you being in the main show, but what I do remember is at the end, like a group of girls, like say 10 models or whatever, were all supposed to put on these big taffeta skirts and then come out at the end as like a whole rainbow of, you know, these beautiful taffeta skirts and come down the runway.
But guess what happened?
And I don't remember at what order, if you were first or last, but
I was first. So I remember what happened was that great girl, Erin. I remember because I actually watched a video of this recently. So I opened the show with my little pebble, you know, hair all in little, lots of pebble Flintstone things, lots of little kind of wee ponytails on top of my head. And I had those pants on, but I had a black, I looked like a black sort of medieval black spy or something like that. And I opened the show and then at the end, and Erin O'Connor, that lovely girl, model, she was like, she really was supposed to open the show, but I did. And then she came next. And then at the end, it would be like Erin was coming down in this dress. But what we did was I went out and it was a long skirt that went down to your feet. And she had the top part and I wore the bottom part. And so I walked out first topless with this kind of thing on, like a skirt, long, long skirt on. And then she came out like sort of going, "You've got my skirt, you've got my skirt." And we, and then we kind of did a bit of a shtick. And then we walked down together. So the whole outfit was complete, but it was over two humans. But one of the things interesting about that is it was very ahead of its time. It's very, you know, non-binary, very gender fluid.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you looked amazing, and I think that
alike. Why wouldn't I? And also, we looked kind of similar. Like I was very skinny at the time, and she's like this tall, long drink of water. Both dark hair.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was actually kind of nice. It's very androgynous sort of vibe going on.
Yeah, I always really love that idea, and I always think genderless. I always want to people to think of my clothes as genderless. I mean, obviously you can't, you know, a lot of things you can't, but when possible,
I think you've succeeded in that. Yeah. I think a lot of your clothes are very gender non-specific. I was thinking about this before we talked, like a lot of the clothes I've got of yours that I've kept over the years, I'm wearing something right now. I wore something specially that you would see on this podcast, but of course you can't see me. It's that, it's quite recent. It's this sort of stripy long sleeve top and it's sort of stripy blue and red and orange stripes on it. And it's very much to me feels like I'm a sort of a teenager in the 50s.
Oh, yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like I'm on an episode of Mad Men and I'm the child running about. And someone's saying, "Go out there and play with that plastic bag." And I always think of them as very colourful. Remember when I hosted Saturday Night Live, I wore you for my opening thing. And it was like a pair of shorts that were sort of with that very kind of, again, sort of very evocative Americana squares on them, orange squares on a kind of a beigey sort of, you know, beigey background, long shorts like that, and an orange t-shirt, you know, shirt with a collar, what do you call it, whatever that you call that thing, with sort of little flowers on it as well. So I always think it's really great. You mix up patterns, and also you mix up sort of feminine things with masculine things, like little flowers on a shirt. I thought it was great.
Wait, I need to see that. I'm going to Google. I have to find that. That sounds amazing. Wait, I think I was there.
You came. Yes, you came.
Yeah, I was there.
Men in shorts, like shorts becoming a sort of a thing as a sort of, you know, with suits and everything. And that was something you did ages ago. Like those shorts to me were like dress shorts, you know, and I did. I wore them to host Saturday Night Live. And then many, many years later, when I hosted the Tonys, I wore a short suit, like a lovely, it was a lilac colour. But that designer, Stefan F, do you know him? He used to have a place in the, oh, he's really nice. And I wore a suit by him, and it was a lovely lilac suit. Very, very nice, very formal. But I had shorts on, and it was caused a fucking sensation. This is like 2015. It was like I'd worn a jock strap to host the Tonys.
And no, I remember like, that. I remember that. Wait, were you with Krista? No,
Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kristen
was
my thing.
Oh, perfect.
And we had such a laugh. I mean, actually, it was kind of a nightmare. But the actual evening was, you know, that the sort of the frenzy of all. But it was such fun. But the next day, it was all this furore about the fact that there was a couple of outfits I think I had shorts on. But because it was the opening, that's the one that everybody saw. Just people went nuts, and of course the line sold out at from the store because some people liked it. I remember just people said that they thought he said he thinks he's being edgy. He just seems middle aged. That's the quote. Of course, aside from all the good ones have been forgotten, but that was that Frank Rich man in the New York magazine said that I had seemed middle aged. I was like, I am fucking middle aged, bitch. Deal with it.
That's what, okay. Okay, first of all, I will say you have always been fearless. We'll go back to that. But
yes,
this is the best quote that I read that Dita Von Teese said, that someone said to her, you know, you're so famous, you're so, like, everyone pays so much attention to you, and you're not even that pretty. And she said, I know, isn't it great? Isn't that the best?
So I love her.
I use that all the time. Like, if people insult me, I'm like, I know, isn't it great?
That's so good. Yeah.
Because what are they gonna say, you know?
Yeah. That's okay, great. I love that.
So back to fearless. What I mean, I could go through a long list of boikinis.
With a champagne bottle inside it.
I remember a black satin suit that you borrowed to wear to a some event, and it came back, and the pants actually came back in two separate legs attached at the waistband.
And I would like to apologize.
What exactly happened?
Well, this is, I should tell everybody. So I borrowed a suit. This is 1,000 years ago. It was some event in LA. Cynthia kindly shipped me this lovely suit to this event. I wore it. It was great. It was a huge sensation. Then I sent it back to Cynthia, and it was ripped at the seam, at the crotch. And all the way, yeah. And what had happened was, later on in the evening, I had been entertaining a young gentleman, and I straddled this young gentleman with my suit on, and the entire thing ripped because it was that style where the thighs were very tight. You know, the sort
everything
of that look
was
of
tight on that.
Yeah, it's like a tight. So it's like, so when you opened your legs wide to straddle someone, I should have taken my trousers off first, but I was you know, I had the fire in me, and I ripped these things. I was like, oh my gosh, and I don't know if I knew you that well at the time. I must have done, I suppose. But anyway, I didn't say anything, and I just thought, well, I'll just put it back in the box and send it back. And then I remember you, years later when I confessed this, and you said, "Alan, that's so terrible," because you went into your store and shouted at the seamstresses for bad workmanship. But it's actually I'd been straddling some boy in the back of a taxi in LA.
Well, I heard the story that Mick Jagger would have all his suits made in two sizes. One was for the small size, very tight, would be made for walking the red carpet. And then after the event or whatever, he would change into the bigger size so he could straddle people, I guess.
That's very, yeah, I guess. Yes, I'm totally with him. Because I have some things, you know, up here actually in the Catskills, I've got a lot of clothes that I keep that I've worn, I really love, and I don't want to throw, you know, give them away or recycle them. I keep them up here because we've got lots of space. And I tried something on recently and I thought, oh, have I put on weight? And it's not, I haven't actually, I've lost weight. But it's that thing of sometimes you get an outfit and I'm sort of sample size. And I hate going for fittings. So I will try and squeeze into anything so I don't have to go for a fitting. And usually if it's the waist, you can cover it. If it's a little tight, you can cover it with a jacket, you know, all this stuff. So I have got a couple of things that are so incredibly tight for me that I could never wear them throughout a normal evening. But because I can make it for, like, you know, the 20 minutes you're on the red carpet.
You'd have to go in a sprinter van. Or maybe
I'd have to be carried horizontally by my friends and then just propped up onto the red carpet. And then as soon as I get off the red carpet, I exhale and all the buttons pop off and hit Martha Stewart in the eye.
Full Monty. The whole thing just blows apart.
Yes. I remember once when I got nominated for an Emmy and I asked you to make me an outfit. And I remember I said I wanted something flowy and sort of... it was exactly, you made exact, but you said, "This is not what I thought you were going to say. I want something sort of like, you know, like a dinner suit, but sort of like dinner suit meets pajamas. That's what I wanted. Like a, you know, a black tie meets pajamas." And you made me this great thing. And I remember it was such a good look. It was sort of I wanted to look like a 1930s or 20s movie star.
Oh, yeah.
And I had sunglasses and it's a very good look.
I am just here to make your dreams come true.
Ah, bless you. You do make my
dreams
come true.
Wasn't it like a soft tie or something you had with it? Like a little soft, almost like a bow or something?
It was almost like a bow? Yes, it was. Like a floppy tie, a floppy bow tie
floppy.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
Also, I've got that. That was a good look. And also I've got that ruff you made me. It's been on these shelves for a good few years. I better give it a little bit. But I thought I've got to bring that out and give that a wear. A proper, you know, Elizabethan ruff. So good.
That was from the show, the runway show that you wore.
I think it was from this photo. Yes, from this picture. So I'm wearing it in this sketch, but I never actually wore it in the show. So you must have, I think you sent it to me afterwards, because I remember it came in a really long box because it was all laid out. You know, it wasn't in a circle. It was laid out long. And it looked like a kind of a sort of a centipede. And then I realized it was the ruff like undone. So that should be, I think that's going to be my look for post-COVID fashion look, is I'm going to try and bring ruffs back. It's actually a very good social distancing thing, because people have to stay a little bit away from you because you'll get boinked by your ruff. Remember where you heard it first. Cynthia Rowdy, this has been such fun, and I'm so grateful to you for coming out of your infrared sauna and talking to me.
What if I was in the infrared sauna the whole time? Maybe.
Ooh, that'd be great. Maybe doing it'd be a radioactive podcast, the first ever radioactive podcast. And
oh my God. So any excuse to be able to have a chat with you is amazing.
Bless you, my darling.
I
can't wait to see you in real life soon. Yes.
No.
Let's have a fantastic dinnery, chatty, boozy Club Coming in night out as soon as we're vaccinated.
Clad, yes.
Yeah, jock strap and rough.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Love to the fam.
Yes, same.
Love you.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, I'm going to put my picture of Cynthia's designs back on its place in Alan Cumming's shelves. And I hope you'll join me next time for more fun and more memories and more friendship. Take care. Alan Cumming Shelves is hosted by me, Alan Cumming, duh, and produced by the lovely Jack Claremont. We are part of the Acast Creator Network and the Crowd Network too. We just love networks. Another Crowd Network podcast to check out is Unaccountable. It's a podcast fighting for police accountability in the United States. It's a podcast that tells the stories of innocent people who've been killed by the police, just like George Floyd, but also people like Mohamed Muhaimin, Shacey House, and Carrie Illich. And so many more you haven't heard about, but you really should have. The stories can be difficult to listen to, but this could be the most important podcast you'll ever hear. It's a podcast fighting for change, and we need to join that fight. Just search for Unaccountable in your podcast app now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.